Remember to subscribe to our Zoom Catchers YouTube channel and follow us on our socials.
Thank you so much for joining us today for Conversations on Aging with Sheila Basapo-Moyo. Sheila, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Kimberly. It's so good to see you.
It's so good to see you too. And it's good to see you in a different context because I'm so used to seeing you with your plays and online and in another situation. We'll get to that. But now that I've introduced you, please tell us more about yourself and how did you get into the elder care space?
Hey, well, I am originally from St. Louis and I have traveled about the world and coming back to St. Louis to be with my family in my neighborhood was a wonderful YMCA. And I was just so amazed that there was this beautiful complex in my neighborhood. So I went up to the Y and asked them if I could teach a chair yoga class. And they said, sure. And in doing that, I met with many of my peers who are older adults, and it was just a fantastic experience. So I ended up, besides teaching chair yoga, I ended up being a part-time older adult coordinator. That was my title. And I planned different activities for seniors, and we met once a week. We had quite a few older adults there. As a matter of fact, I ended up being also the secretary for our group. Our group is known as Active Older Adults, AOA, and it still exists today. I started at the YMCA in 2013. So as secretary, we had as much as 300 older adults in our database. But with the pandemic, we lost a few people, and that number kind of dissipated over time. So our numbers have decreased since then, but that's pretty much how I got started in working with older adults, which is what I do now on a full-time basis. I work with older adults.
Awesome. So it just kind of started out, sounds like on a whim, and here you already made a career out of it. You know, what was it that led you from, okay, I'm just helping out with chair yoga, now into a profession where you're doing it on a full-time basis and you're doing it with, you know, intentions and goals and missions?
Yeah. And I'll say, not only am I involved with the physical aspect of healthy aging, I teach classes like Tai Chi discussion classes where I combine conversations and discussions about health, healthy eating, and how to communicate with your healthcare professional. We talk about fear of falling. I teach classes on balance, and it's just taught me quite a bit. It's made me more conscious of being an older adult and more sensitive to the issues that older adults face. So not only do I do the health education classes, but I also advocate for legislation that is relevant to older adults. This one group that I'm involved in is called the Silver-Haired Legislature. And the Silver-Haired Legislature actually started here in the state of Missouri. And I think we're in about 10 other states. We're not throughout the country yet, but it's a group of volunteers who meet And we go to the state capitol. We actually go into the legislature. We go through the whole process of how do you propose a bill? How do you follow that bill through the legislature until it's passed? And we talk to our legislators or senators, our representatives, and we push legislation that helps older adults. For example, we were quite instrumental in getting the medical marijuana bill passed here in Missouri. We
Oh,
just
wow.
filed another piece of legislation dealing with the personal property tax, so that if you are 60 or 65, I can't remember which, I think it's 65, your property tax stays at one level. Even though the property values increase, your tax will stay at the same level. So we were able to get that passed. And so we do quite a few things of that nature. Another thing that I'm involved in is basically just distributing information to help older adults.
Thank you so much for that. And I'm curious, was it that as far as, going from teaching classes and on healthy living to then actively pursuing helping on the legislative side, how did you make that leap? Was it things that you noticed? Was it gaps that you noticed in the system? Was it your own personal experience? If you could elaborate more on that, that'd be great.
Okay, how did I make that leap? Well, let me
And I ask
see.
because there's a lot of people, in the field, and there's a lot of people raising, questions and alarms about it. But how did you specifically say, you know what, there's this part of it here that needs to be addressed as well? Was it just other people were bringing those issues to you, or things that you noticed on your own, or a combination?
Good question. I would say it's a combination of things. I've always been civically minded and tried to listen and get my information from different sources, newspapers, radio, television, media, social media. And with my particular job as well, I have an opportunity to be involved and meet with people who are involved with issues of legislation. And it's just keeping your eyes open and seeing, well, how can I be of service? And fortunately, this position that I have allows me to become more actively involved also with finding ways to really bring about meaningful change. So I think that's what got me involved. And of course, being a child of the civil rights movement, that has always played heavily in things that I do. I can remember when I was a young kid and going to the park with my family, and we passed White Castle. I don't know if you have White Castle in California, but White
I'm
Castle
familiar
is
with them from New York. I'm not sure if they're here in California, but I know White Castle.
I remember as a kid going by that restaurant, and I saw black men walking around picketing in front of White Castle, and they were carrying a sign saying, "I am a man." And I think I was 5 years old, and I said to my father, "Daddy, why are those men wearing? It's so obvious that they're men. Why are they wearing that sign?" And eventually he explained it to me, and it just dawned on me, yeah, okay, now I understand. I understand that we're protesting for our civil rights, and the whole civil rights movement stayed with me. And I think that was just the early beginnings of my sense of activism that we all need to be involved in, and what's going on, especially in times like like these.
No, and you know, I have a follow-up question to that because you mentioned your civil rights advocacy, and I think when most of us think about civil rights, we think of traditional groups, underrepresented groups, Black and Brown people or women. But do you see that, there is a growing a trend to acknowledge senior care issues as civil rights linked kind of advocacy? If you could elaborate on that, that'd be great.
Oh, wow. Definitely, especially now with Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, all these issues that affect older adults, housing being an issue. Me personally, dealing with just recently the tornado here in St. Louis. I don't know if you remember May 16th. Is a
I do
day that
remember
we'll
that.
never forget. Still driving through our neighborhoods. Here we are in, what is it, now we're in the new year, January. And you still see tarp on rooftops and people still dealing with where they're going to stay, or they're temporarily in accommodation. But as far as getting their homes back the way they were, people are still dealing with those issues. Being a member of the Active Older Adults, we have people coming to the Y and speaking to us, our older person, our councilman. We're constantly being and getting our representatives to be accountable to explain to us what is being done to help us, older adults. So I think more and more of our organizations are stepping up, because if we don't do it, who's going to do it for us? So we have now the number of Americans 65 and older has been going up nationwide. And so we have, I think the census projections have said that by 2050, about 23% of the U.S. population will be 65 plus. And that's up from 17% in 2022. So I think as our numbers increase, we're going to have more and more people advocating for the rights of older adults.
100%. And, I think also as more and more people have to take care of elderly or are impacted by elder needs, there's going to be more of a sense of what are we doing. And that's really the reason why I started this podcast. I was a caregiver for my elderly aunt. And for about 8 years, we did that. And throughout that whole time, we were having to advocate for her. And I learned so much about what was going on, things that I honestly would have never have known had I not been in that situation.
That's right.
And
That's
I
right.
was really starting to understand that that block of the population, I felt like their needs weren't necessarily being addressed in a manner that was always where they were being heard. And I felt that as a society, we tend to not really care about that segment of the population as much as we should. We're a very youth-oriented society. And it was I was really amazed. And I ran into all kinds of stumbling blocks with insurance and all kinds of issues. And I kind of felt like, oh, I'm the only one. And then that was another eye-opening revelation. It's like there's millions of people dealing with this, and millions more are going to continue to deal with it. And we're living longer, so we're all going to be dealing with it, either your own family or friends. And so I was wondering if you could, speak to that. What sort of trends are you seeing as far as this issue is concerned?
Well, let me back up a little bit and tell you how much I identify with what you just said. I am currently and have been a caregiver for my brother and sister, which also makes me more sensitive to older adults and the disabled. I have three siblings, three other siblings. We're all under the same roof. I never thought I would be back living with my siblings under the same roof. But anyway, two of my siblings have been diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic, and just going to the hospital to take my sister to see her psychiatrist was an eye-opener. You would think that being in a healthcare setting that you wouldn't run into discrimination, but I saw it with my own eyes, that how my sister was treated, if I had not been there to speak up for her. There's a lot to be done as far as the rights of the disabled. And when you are an older person and disabled, you got a double whammy. You got a triple whammy being a person of color as well. I had the experience being with my sister one time. She was not having a very good day, but we went to see her psychiatrist, and we were at the doctor's office. She was having an episode at the doctor's office, and it was a new doctor that she was meeting. And I was accustomed to her behavior, but at the end of the session, when we were about to leave, I opened the door to push my sister out when she was in a wheelchair. And there were two guards standing outside the door. So the doctor, I guess he was feeling uncomfortable, but he felt he had to call security. And I turned to him and I said, What can this 70-year-old woman in a wheelchair do to you that you felt you had to call security? And but anyway, I was just really upset about it. And actually, I talked to a couple of other health professionals who told me I should have followed up with that complaint to somebody higher at the hospital. But I never did. But it's just something that stuck with me in terms of what you were saying, that if you don't speak up for your loved one, who's going to do it? And so now I try my best to speak up and not hold that back. First of all, the trends that I notice is that there's lack of housing, lack of options for older adults. Also, I think that we do need more options, more creative options on how to deal with the scarcity of that. There's also a greater need for transportation. Here in the city of St. Louis, we're constantly getting calls about transportation, people needing transportation to go to a grocery store or go to the doctor. So there's not enough of that. And I guess even health disparities is an issue, especially with people of color, older adults. I do health education classes. I'm really feel blessed that I can do that, because a lot of our seniors have health conditions like diabetes, obesity, heart disease, asthma. And so there's a need for greater education in terms of health, proper eating. If you I live in North St. Louis, and North St. Louis is predominantly Black, low-income area. And on every corner, you see fried chicken restaurants, McDonald's, Taco Bell, so many fast food places. But then, structurally, our society makes it so hard. You work 8 to 5 or 8 to 6 or whatever it is. You go home, you don't feel like cooking. So a lot of people stop off and just grab what they can grab. They got to pick up the kids from daycare. I don't know how young couples make it, really? How do they relate to each other? There's no time to even be a family. You know what I mean?
No,
So,
it's true. It's true. And
yeah.
I wanted to just backtrack a little bit based on some of the things that you just brought up. And I think, you mentioned transportation as issues and housing as issues. And it just feels like, or I get the sense now I've been talking about these issues in my own personal experiences taking care of our aunt, that as a society, we just haven't really thought through all of what it means to have a population where people are living longer. Some of them are going to be in good health, and many of them aren't. It's sort of like if you go back 40 years ago, what the people were probably, making it to retirement. I don't have the facts and figures, but we weren't living as long as we are now, right? And definitely not as healthy. So you have active people that are still out there wanting to participate in society. What role do we have there? And then we have people that have, chronic illnesses and diseases that you brought up. And I know that nutrition is like a key determinant for healthy living in general, but definitely for
Exactly.
seniors. And it's like, well,
Seniors.
where's the education, the educational component for all of this, right?
Right. That's what it, you know, I go into the senior centers, I go into apartment complexes, but there's such a great need for that. And in our neighborhoods, we don't have access to grocery stores. And then I ask myself the question, well, why? Why don't we have grocery stores? Well, lots of reasons. Sometimes it's crime. There's high crime in our areas. Grocery stores don't want to locate in the area. There's unemployment. Nobody wants to invest in the areas. And where I'm at right now, even the dollar store closed down. So, where do people get a loaf of bread? They got to go to the corner liquor store. You know, that's always going to be there. I doubt they'll close down. But anyway.
No, and it's true. And a lot of those issues that you
Yeah.
talked about are issues that not just elderly people are dealing with, but we'll just say average people. But if you compound that with an elderly person who has mobility issues, who has health issues, how do they get to that store, and how do they, manage those challenges that are tricky for anybody at any age? And then you compound that with those other issues. But I do want to,
See, one
go
more
ahead.
thing also about that. I got to mention that because this man sticks in my head. I'll never forget him. His name is Greg. And Greg was the, I guess you could call him the neighborhood alcoholic. And I would always walk my dog in the neighborhood, and Greg would join me. Greg, one time, he joined me and he had a big knot on his head. And I said, Greg, what happened to you? He says, oh, I fell down. I fell down on the curb. You know, he didn't lift his foot high enough to get onto the sidewalk. And I said, well, why don't you use a cane? Just use a cane to help you. He says, a cane? I can't use a cane. I'll seem weak. You know, I don't want the guys in the neighborhood to think I'm weak. So I, you know, can you imagine? He'd rather risk falling and die from his fall than to appear weak. So, anyway, these are some of the issues that older adults are dealing with too, is that perception and how are they perceived in the neighborhood. So.
Oh, 100%. And I really appreciate you bringing that up, because I had similar issues with our aunt before she passed away. And she had canes, and then she also had a walker. And she would get training on how to, use the walker and maneuver it from occupational therapists and things of that nature, and we were always encouraging her. And it came out in conversations where she would say, I hate the walker, because she just hated the way it made her look. She felt like she looked old. And
Right.
we were always trying to say, this is a tool. This is going to help you not fall. This is going to
Right.
support you. It's going to make us feel comfortable because we know that you have that support. But for her, it indicated that she was frail and she was
Right.
old. And it was such a big psychological jump for her to make. And I had, I didn't really know other people had that thought. I haven't really talked to other people about that specifically, but it's interesting. And I think that's a part of the education. It's like, listen, you want to
Yes.
fall and bust your head open?
Exactly. And this is why also, Kimberly, what you're doing is so important because you are helping to dispel that myth of age. Well, ageism is not a myth, it's a reality. We are dealing with the discrimination of aging, and it's internal as well as external. People feel inwardly, I am not worthy. I want to stay invisible because I'm aging. And, I have a sister she's 80 years old. And when I'm driving down the street and she's in the passenger side, she'll look out the window and she'll say, "Oh, look at that one." And then she's got those granny pants on. And I'm going, "Jackie, that is you. You are that woman." So it's like we not only have to overcome the ageism of our minds, but we have to deal with, constantly being bombarded with these commercials of what is beauty, that having wrinkles or having gray hair is not beautiful. And that is why I am so grateful for my work experience, for my personal experience of being involved with older adults, because I want to enjoy these years. I feel so alive and active and vibrant, and I have so much to give, and I really do not feel a sense of negativity when it comes to aging. I really don't. And I just wish other people would feel that way. But I think it's changing. I think it's changing. But still, I run into people that really struggle with that. So.
I agree, and I appreciate you bringing that up because I feel the same way, and I feel that taking care of my aunt was a huge blessing in disguise. It was challenging and difficult and frustrating at times, dealing with a lot of those things that I mentioned. But at the same time, it was so insightful, and I learned so much about how to care for somebody kind of selflessly, how to really support somebody. I learned about myself, the kind of patience that I had that I have in my own heart, and hoping that, I can take that information and put it out there for other people,
Right.
because we're all aging. If we're lucky enough, we're aging, right? I mean, first there's
Wait,
that, like,
exactly.
and
Exactly.
so.
And the important thing also to remember is you have to take care of yourself. You have to take care of yourself as a caregiver. And that's something that I had to learn, that I felt that I had to do so much for my brother and sister. I had to, I had been given this opportunity of getting an education. I got my college degrees. I had really a guilt trip. But I had to come out of that and try not to make my siblings dependent on me. And that is something that a caregiver, you have to kind of balance. You got to take care of yourself, as you also try to take care of your loved one. You got to find some balance there is what is important to.
100%. I mean, it's all about balance and making sure your needs are met. But also, I think for me, what I really dialed into with taking care of her and also being now interested in this topic is I'm looking at my own future, right? It's like, okay, so what do I
Right.
need to do to make my golden years smooth and glistening? Because it doesn't all have to be a sad story. And I
Exactly.
think you're right. A big part of it is psychological. It's like I am so glad that I, like you, don't have that kind of hang up. I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting old. I'm like, this is the best I've felt my whole entire life. I don't want to go back. I'm not going back. I'm moving
You're not
forward. And
going
how can
back. You're moving forward.
and how can I move forward feeling great and being healthy and being excited and doing the best that I can and still make contributions to my society?
Right. And remembering that you have to take care of yourself now, right now. Don't wait until some future time to say, oh, I'm going to get up out of this chair and I'm going to walk tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
Start now.
manana.
And oh, by the way, you just triggered something in my mind. I just joined a book club and we're reading a book on preparing for your retirement as a solo ager. I have no children and I'm divorced, and I think there's a large segment of the aging population that don't have children and don't have someone that they can fall back on, you know. So what are some of the alternatives and steps for those folks who are aging as solo agers? And I think joining book clubs and things like that to discuss these issues with other seniors is helpful. So, as well as,
100%.
being with caregivers, I'm doing the same.
100%. I think that, the other realities a lot of people are waking up to is just because you have children doesn't mean they're going to be caring for you. And I think,
Exactly.
a lot of people unfortunately have found that out, and they can't for all kinds of reasons, right?
Right.
And so it's a matter of, well, how do I continue to extend my life in the healthiest way possible? I know a lot of people don't want to be a burden to other people. And I think, in my conversations with you and other people, it's just really a matter of having conversations. Like, when do you need to sit down and have these conversations and say, these are things that scare me about aging. These are things that I embrace. Because I think, there are some things to be concerned about. We do live in a society where elder care is not necessarily first and foremost considered a priority. And it's, just having these conversations. I'm seeing more and more of it. I definitely am. But I think a lot of people in positions of, let's say, power, I think they're afraid of their own aging. Talking about aging doesn't even seem to be a conversation that a lot of people want to have. And I think it's a personal reason why, not because, oh my God, we should be doing this for society. They don't want to look at their own aging. And so
Their
if
own
you're
age.
not, and that's fine, but if you're in a position where you actually could make change, it's kind of concerning, because it's not going away, right?
Exactly. And I also look at it from an international perspective because, I've had the opportunity to live in Zimbabwe for 10 years and to see how older adults are treated in Africa, and I've had the opportunity to work in Asia. And in both cultures, I find that older adults are revered and held in high esteem. I'm just really grateful that I've had that opportunity to experience that. And I think that has also helped to reinforce my perceptions and not let those negative thoughts, come into my mind about growing old. So I'm really grateful for that. At the same time, I can see in African society, modern African society, that they also deal with those stereotypes as well. So it creeps in, even over there in other countries.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on and discussing these important topics. And I do want to talk about like senior living options. I know that you're involved in that, and I don't know if a lot of people are even aware of that, but if you could explain, some senior living communities, what are you seeing as far as trends and things of that nature?
Okay, well, senior living options. I'm involved with an organization called the St. Louis Village. St. Louis Village is a group of volunteers in a certain geographical area. St. Louis, the village concept is not new. It's throughout the country, but here in St. Louis, it is a group that I'm involved with. I'm on the board. Volunteers who help neighbors helping neighbors to help people to stay in their homes. That is the main goal of the village concept. And we get donations and grants and have put together a directory of different resources. We refer contractors, plumbers, companies. You can always ask people for referrals. If you need transportation to see your doctor, you can hook into the network and call activities. We have different activities where we get together and get to know each other. So that is one organization that helps to keep adults in their homes. And just on a personal level, there are assisted living options for older adults, based on their income. One thing that I've noticed, of course, here in St. Louis and I'm nationwide, is rents are going up and up and up. So some options that older adults have been exploring are house sharing. For example, I know people that have done that and who have tried to deal with the housing shortage that way because rents are so astronomical. I think that the village concept is a good one. And house sharing is a good one too.
Absolutely. And I think, I've heard a lot of, and I still hear people talking about multi-family living where they have different
Oh, yeah.
generations. I mean, people have been doing that obviously for a long time, but making it more openly talked about, and pursued, because, the reality is people want to, here we call it aging in place. People want to age in their home, especially if they're not ill, if they don't need medical care. And that's the way it was with our aunt. She wanted to be here in her home until the very end, and we were able to make that happen for her. So
Oh,
really,
that's
really
great.
happy about that.
Yeah. Now,
But
think
not
about
everyone can do that, right?
And when older adults, and I know from experience, you want to stay in your home, but you're staying usually in a home that you've been in the years and years and years that needs repair. And if you live in an area that is predominantly low income, it's hard to even get a contractor to come in and rehab or fix problems because they're afraid that they're going to be robbed or attacked or whatever. So it's almost like I can't even tell you how many times I have called a repair person to come to my house. And when they learn where I live, they call me back and say, "Oh, ma'am, I'm sorry. I got another call. I'll check with you tomorrow." And they never call back. These are the kind of problems that we're dealing with. That's another reason why we can't keep up our homes. So those are housing issues. And
And
you
it's
end up
just
having to deal with somebody that you wouldn't ordinarily deal with because nobody else is going to come over and fix your house. You have to deal with criminals.
And
So.
that obviously exposes people to elements that they didn't necessarily want to engage with, right? Just, I just want
Yeah.
my Just want my roof fixed, right? Not all this other
Right.
stuff.
That's right. You know.
Well, and then that, I think that's another issue of people seeking to take advantage of elders, whether it's through services or of all kinds. And it's something to obviously think about. And especially if people, contractors or whoever, see an older person and they don't think there's anybody else around that's got their back or something. It's just more reason why people and we all need to be kind of sticking together and saying, not over here, my friend. You're not gonna be doing that over here. I mean, and I had to, just personally, I had to go to bat for my aunt on multiple occasions just about this very issue. And it's like, well, if I don't say anything, who is going to? Nobody's going to. And so in so many ways, it actually helped me kind of strengthen my own voice and my own wherewithal to make things happen.
And the situation, I guess, in St. Louis and compounded in because of our recent tornado disaster. And for those folks like myself who own their own home and contractors know that they have the upper hand and try to get somebody to come over. And if you're, like I said, in a certain neighborhood, it's doubly hard to get somebody to come over. So, anyway, but there are some good people out there. And, some people have been able to get things done and get their homes with you. So it's been a blessing for some people. So I won't say it's not been all bad. So some people are getting their homes repaired and taken care of.
100%. And there are a lot of great people out there that, care about doing a good job regardless of the age of the client and things of that nature. So hats off to them. But we're talking about issues that many people face, and this is one of them. So as far as just a question about the villages that you described, are they paying, are people paying like a monthly fee to be a part of it? How does that part work?
Well, there is membership. I'm just trying to remember. It's been so long since I've looked at the membership. I
Oh, that's
think
okay. There's some type of membership that
there
people
is a
have to.
membership fee. And because of the funding, there is funding from grants as well as donations. The village has been able to lower the membership to try to make it more representative of the community. And to bring more low-income people into the village.
Excellent.
So yeah.
Keep up the good work. And I know that, we have those kinds of villages out here in California as well. I'm assuming that they're pretty much probably in all the states at this point are getting there. So,
And
great.
what city are you in now? You're in
We're
San
in the Bay
Francisco.
Area. We're in the Bay Area. And so we have a couple, I've researched, I've seen them here, and in other places. So, I know it's a trend, and I know there's going to be more of these types of situations because people, they want to be in their own homes, but they need, support, obviously. They don't want to move into one of those other types of senior living places. And so it's all about creating options for people, I think, and keeping people's safety at the forefront.
An aspect of village concept is overcoming social isolation. People getting to know each other, getting to know your neighbors, taking care of your neighbor. It's been great in that sense. I just attended the New Year's Eve party and we had, I don't know, hundreds of people there. So it's a good concept. I hope that, that concept spreads even more. We need something like that.
100%, because it's not just, seniors, but society, our society in general has real issues with social isolation and keeping people connected and things like that. So great. And we're here with Sheila Busuttil-Moyo, and we're talking about all kinds of things related to senior living and aging. And before we transition to into talking about theater and art, because that's how we met. What are your top five or your top tips for healthy living for seniors?
My top tips, I would say it's important to stay active. It's important to stay active, physically active, take care of your body, Exercise, exercise, exercise. Drink plenty of water. And stay connected with your social group, your peers, not only your peers, but younger adults, mentoring if you can. I listen to some of my colleagues and they talk about, oh, you just want to travel, we're done raising our kids. Now we just want to have fun. Well, I think that's all well and good, but we have to mentor our children. We have to. That is something that we just got to do it. We have to. The suicide rate amongst especially young Black men is higher than any other group. So our children need us. So I would say to try to find it in one's heart to mentor young people. I think it's important to be passionate. Be passionate about something you really love, and you wake up in the morning thinking about it, and stay involved with that. So be passionate and be positive. Be positive. Don't let anybody try to put you down and make you feel less than what you are because of age. And if anybody does that, then just check them out of your life and keep moving. So
No,
keep
it's
it moving.
keeping
I don't know if that's five things, but anyway, that's what I
those are great, whatever the number is. And it's interesting that you bring that last point up. I remember at some point, I don't know if it was this year or last year, the oldest living American, I think, passed away, and she was like 107 or something like that. And prior to her passing away, she had been interviewed, and one of the questions was, well, what's the secret to her longevity? And the first thing she said was getting rid of toxic people.
Oh, yeah.
Not having toxic, negative people, because it's stress. It's not uplifting. It's not supportive. And you don't even have to be older to get that. It's like, why have people around that are trying to bring you down or drive? And they may not even intentionally be doing that, but just the energy that they're putting out there in general is negative. So I'm with her on that. I'm like, I sense, get a whiff of toxicity, it's over.
I know.
Bye. I'm not even trying to help you or correct you. We're done, because I don't have time for
I know. Oh, hey, I got another thing. I have adopted, well, they don't know it yet, but I've adopted some young folks in their 20s, and as a result of my ex passed away a couple of weeks ago, and so I've gotten a lot of
Oh,
phone calls.
sorry to hear about that.
Well, thank you. I got a lot of phone calls from Africa, and in a way, it has opened up these new pathways to reconnect with people, and I'm just so excited about it. These new opportunities that are springing up, reconnecting with people that I haven't talked to in like 20, 30 years. And so I'm excited about that too.
Awesome. That is great to hear about connections and reconnecting with older people. Awesome. So let's talk about art and theater and our connection. And I know that you have also been working in that space, the theater art space, and you believe in theater arts for, as a positive, having a positive impact on elderly people. So if you could talk more about that, that'd be great.
Okay, well, let's see what got me started in that. I went to see a show in St. Louis, and this guy from Chicago came, and he contacted all the different churches and sold tickets to the show. And I came, and the house was packed. We were so excited to be there. And I would say 80% of the audience was older adults. And one skit that he put on the stage was involved Emmett Till. And he tried to turn it into a satire or a comedy. I was appalled that he would do that. And I looked around the people around me. Nobody was laughing. It fell flat. And I said, I can do better than that. I can do better than that. And so that is what got me thinking about theater and how important it is to tell our stories and to be honest and in a truthful, respectful way. And I am a member of the American Association of University Women and was asked to do some research on a suffragist. And I found information on a black suffragist, wanted to do and highlight her life and let people know about her. I refused to let her die. And that's when I wrote the play, and it's opened up different doors. And I started my theater group with a friend of mine. And we're just forging ahead. It's the theater group is called Black Aging Arts Theater, and focusing on older adults and trying to learn more about performance skills and acting and directing and producing. And that's how it kind of jumped off.
Awesome. Awesome. And Sheila's being very modest here, so we'll expand on that. So the play started out, it was what, 20 some odd pages, and it was first read at the International Black Theater Festival, which
Correct, yes.
at the Garland Thompson Senior Readers series, and then it went over pretty well. And then after the, when what year was that that you first read
That
that
was
there?
2024. Was it 2024? Yes, 2024. We're in 2026, I'm sorry, now. So the theater festival is every 2 years, so I'm going back to 2024, thinking it was 2024.
It was
Yeah, I think.
because they didn't do it during the pandemic, so it must have been 2024.
Yeah, I think so. And so it was about 20 pages, yeah. And so read that, and everybody seemed to be very excited about it. And then I took some of the classes with the Frank Silvera workshop with Vera,
Vera
because Vera's
Katz,
last
Professor Vera
cat.
Katz from Howard
Yes.
University.
Yes. The legend, Dr. Katz.
Legend.
Right. And so we continued to work on it. That one thing I learned about working on a play is that it is a collaborative effort and constantly growing, constantly changing. And how important it is to get feedback on the play. So here in St. Louis, I've put the play on and it's been well received. And in a couple of months, I'm going to be given an award for the play by the American Association of the University Women. And so I'm excited about that. It just seems like people keep asking me about it. And another church approached me and asked me if I could perform, have the play performed at their church. And I thought that was really nice of them to do. So I'm getting more and more experience with theater. We managed to get a grant, $10,000 grant. So we're going to try to train older adults in the performing arts. And so we're just continuing to grow. So.
That is so exciting to hear, because we did Zoom Catchers in collaboration with the Frank Silvera Writers Workshop and the Billie Holiday Theater. We did two virtual presentations of Sister Suffragists and the Harlem Hellfighter. We did them both last year, the top of last year, and then we finished the season off with them. They went over very well. We're super excited. You can watch them both on our YouTube channel. And tell us more about that story, or tell the audience more about the story. And congratulations on all your success with this.
Oh, well, thank you so much. The story begins with Victoria Clay Haley, who is a Black suffragist in St. Louis. We start with 1904. She's married, and her friend, she has two very prominent African American friends. And this is a true story in the sense that she knows Madame C.J. Walker, and she also is friends with Ida B. Wells. So I incorporate that those friendships into the story of how she fights for women's rights, and she collaborates and talks with these other two very prominent women, and the impact that they have on each other. Victoria Clay Haley also is, they go to a meeting with white suffragists, and they're on a panel with the white suffragists. And so there's a scene in the play about the exchange between the Black suffragists and the white suffragists, and how their interests collide and how their interests overlap. So it's the play deals with women's rights, but not only women's rights, but also the rights of Africans, Americans, and striving to overcome the discrimination and racism and the lynching and all the violence that Black people had to put up with during that at that time. And it was very fascinating to me that Victoria Clay Haley had encounters with Sergeant Henry Johnson, who was the same Sergeant Johnson that President Barack Obama gave the Medal of Honor to posthumously in 2015. So when I saw the connection between those two personalities, I said, wow, this is a play.
Light bulbs went off, right?
Fireworks went off. So
Fireworks went off.
the play involves quite a bit of history, St. Louis history, and Victoria Clay Haley's involvement with Sergeant Henry Johnson, and the things that he experienced during World War I. And he comes to St. Louis and he describes his experience. And basically, the play just deals with so not only women's rights, but also the rights of Black military at that time as well. So I don't want to give away everything, but
You
that's
can
what it was.
learn more, and
Yeah.
you can go watch it on Zoom Catcher's
You can go watch it.
YouTube channel, Sister
Exactly.
Suffragists and the Harlem Hellfighter. It was a great experience, working with you on that, getting that, bringing it to life, and also seeing how it was coming together, and with Vera's coaching and mentoring. And so, we've fortunately been able to work in different capacities, and it's so exciting to see. You take this concept, you're experiencing something in a theater, and you're like, you know what, I can do better than this. And here you are. So.
So excited. Just being involved with the Frank Silvera workshop, and Vera has been so exciting. It has helped me to grow, and to help the play to even blossom even more. So I'm really grateful to have the experience of knowing you and knowing Garland Thomas. And also Vera Katz. It's been a great experience, and I'm grateful for that.
Awesome. And we're so grateful that, you brought the play to us, because it was, we're interested in supporting playwrights that have topics or characters that you don't often hear about, but should be heard about. And also, we appreciate the historical perspective that you took. And yeah, congratulations on all of your success with that. And what kind of, as someone who you didn't come up as a playwright, but you are now, what advice would you have for, up and coming playwrights or people that, I got this idea, but I don't know where to start? What advice would you have for them?
I would say just start writing and researching and stay passionate, excited about your ideal. Keep notebooks, keep journals, keep digging and being excited about your work. I think that's my advice to people. I think just living and sleeping with your idea, that's important because it keeps it alive.
Awesome.
And be open to criticism, constructive criticism. I think that's important too. And not wanting to hold it so close. Sometimes you feel like, oh, this is my baby, this is my baby. But I think you've got to also kind of let it be open to other people's thoughts, ideals. But ultimately, you make the decision finally, but that one should try to keep an open mind. I think that's important.
No, I think that's great advice. I mean, we often say that people are kind of precious about their work, and rightfully so. But at the same time, it's like if you're just writing a play that you just want to read yourself, that's one thing. But if you're writing a play you want audiences to come and see, well, that's a whole nother story. And you, as a, going through this process working with you and other playwrights, it's really important to keep in mind, well, what is the audience going to think of this? What are they going to take away from this? Are they getting it? It's in my head, but is it translating? Because otherwise, you're not going to be able to get the story out in the most strong in the strongest way, right?
In the strongest way, yeah. And I would say, as a new playwright, I struggle with trying to be open to other ideals. And I think it's important to ask questions, and to get advice from people that you trust, that are in that space that you're trying to be a part of, and to try to educate yourself as well on how you protect your work as far as copyrights and things like that. So I think that's important is also.
Awesome. Great. We've been here with Sheila Basobo Moyo, and we have covered a lot of territory. I really appreciate you being on. I know you're busy. And what is coming up next for you in 2026, either in the senior care space or your work, your other work?
Well, I would say I have a lot of interests. My interest also expands to the international scene. I'm involved with the International Institute of African Scholars, and that is a group of people from the diaspora, and how I can expand my love of the arts through that organization, and also expand the Black Aging Arts Theater, see where that is going to take us. We're going to have, I know for sure, we're going to have two performances before April. So we're preparing for that. So that will happen in 2026. And I would like to help other older adults in their love for theater. So I see myself as being a facilitator in helping them and furthering the mission of our theater group, which is training, collaboration, both on a multicultural as well as multi-generational level, with the focus always on older adults. So that is
Great.
what I see. Yeah, but like I said, really trying to bring in that international piece, because I went online and I saw there's a theater festival in South Africa. I had no idea that there was a theater festival in South Africa. So I'd like to find out more about what's going on outside of our borders.
That's excellent. Excellent thinking and great advice. And thank you so much for being on and sharing your wealth of knowledge regarding these issues.
Well,
And we
thank
wish you
you.
much much success in 2026. You can find out more about the various agencies that Sheila is affiliated with in the description. We'll have links there. You can also find out more about FSWW's online workshops at the fsww.org. We do have courses coming up this winter and into the spring. And you can also see her wonderful play, Sister Suffragists and the Harlem Hellfire, on Zoom Catcher's YouTube channel. And we'll see you next time. Thank you and have a great day.